I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is January 11th, 2009. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's subject is educational kinesiology, which is marketed under the trademarked name of the Brain Gym. Here is an substantiated claim from a Brain Gym flyer. Brain Gym builds, enhances, or restores natural neural pathways in the body and brain to assist natural learning. Brain Gym is a set of movement activities such as crawling, drawing, tracing symbols in the air, yawning, and drinking water that, according to the Brain Gym website, are said to help children, adults, and seniors to accomplish a number of different things. For instance, to learn anything faster and more easily, to perform better at sports, to be more focused and organized, to start and finish projects with ease, overcome learning challenges, and reach new levels of excellence. The basic idea behind Brain Gym is that the brain will develop and learning will be enhanced by certain bodily movements. Brain Gym was created in the 1970s by Dr. Paul Dennison and Gail Dennison, who were seeking more effective ways to help children and adults who had been identified as learning disabled. They drew from a large body of research by developmental specialists who had been experimenting with using physical movement to enhance learning ability. They called their work educational kinesiology. Paul worked with chiropractor Richard Tyler, a friend of Arnold Schwarzenegger, and a proponent of alternative chiropractic. For many people knowledgeable of chiropractic, this association is a red flag. And it gets worse. The following is from the Brain Gym website. Applied kinesiology is a distinct work used by chiropractors similar to EduK, that's EDU-K, in its study of muscles and use of muscle checking or muscle testing, and yet different from EduK. Applied kinesiology is based on processes of muscle testing that isolate the response of individual muscles in the body, whereas EduK is oriented to goals and to daily life function and performance rather than to a medical or mechanistic model of the body. Applied kinesiology includes a set of specific tests and related corrections to restore balance in a therapeutic model, and uses test responses to make an evaluation of physiological health. One-to-one correspondence is frequently used between muscle weakness and organ or system function. The chiropractor corrects imbalances using spinal or other muscular, cranial, or lymphatic manipulation, and/or by offering nutritional support. Applied kinesiology is not the kind of activity you want to associate yourself with if you are claiming to be on the leading edge of science. Its practitioners refuse to recognize that their claims are best explained by ideomotor response and have rejected double-blind randomized tests of their work because the tests consistently show applied kinesiology does not work. That the founders of Brain Gym align themselves with a pseudoscience does not bode well. In fact, however, it is a sign of what is in store for those who delve into the nature of this worldwide network dedicated to enhancing living and learning through the science of movement. Fortunately for the Dennisons, they were able to market their product as a new approach to learning, learning through movement. The Brain Gym website says that the program is being used in 80 countries. Dr. Dennison's books and manuals have been translated into 40 languages. Unfortunately, the research they draw on has been widely discredited, and the follow-up research on the program itself is laughably inadequate. There have been only a few published studies on Brain Gym, One involved four participants, one of whom was the author of the study. Three were published in a journal that requires the authors to pay for publication. Another study has serious methodological flaws. The research reported in the article was conducted with elementary school students and then extrapolated to university students. The intervention consisted of students in the target school listening to Mozart during the day and participating in activities based on brain gym, while students in the comparison group participated in their usual activities during the school year. The author concluded that the intervention was successful. However, comparisons were made using only teacher ratings of students in the target school and percentages of increase in mean scores on academic tests, with no determination of whether the differences between the groups were statistically significant. The researcher did not control for threats to validity or address issues related to reliability of measures or to treatment fidelity. The article concluded with a recommendation that university students use brain gym type exercises before an examination to improve test performance, but provided no credible research support for that recommendation. Despite what we've heard about publication bias, which is that negative studies don't get published, a dissertation was published in 2001 on brain gym and found no significant difference between the students doing the brain gym exercises and the control group. Brain Gym International, founded in 1987, is owned by the Educational Kinesiology Foundation, which is located in Ventura, California. Their website posts a 21-page paper touting the research that has been done to support the program. Most of the studies cited that are called academic papers have been published in Brain Gym's own journal. None appear to have been replicated. Copies of some of the studies are available from Brain Gym for $25 each. One of the studies is a review of neuroscientific literature. One concerns ADHD and drugs such as Ritalin. Another deals with NLP and the brain. One is called Movement or Medication, the Alleviation of ADD. Another article was published in Perceptual and Motor Skills and claims to have found that university students trained in Denison, laterality repatterning, and brain gym had better response times to a visual stimulus than those who only did brain gym exercises. Both of those groups responded more quickly than a control group did to visual stimulus. The abstract posted on the Brain Gym page does not note how many students were involved or what the specifics of the training were, nor did the abstract note if the differences were statistically significant. More important, no indication is given that such activities affect learning in any meaningful way. Several of the studies posted in the Brain Gym paper concern work with learning disabled students and such things as static balance. It may well be the case that some of the exercises are useful for developing better balance, but there is no evidence that these activities repattern any part of the brain. In fact, none of the abstracts say anything about how the authors could know anything about what was going on in the brain while students were doing the exercises. According to the Brain Gym website, a balance involves 1. Getting ready to learn, and then setting a goal or intention. Then pre-activities, which playfully identify aspects of the learning that need more focus for integration. Then a plan for integrating the learning into physical movement, in this case through the Brain Gym movements. And finally, post-activities to identify the new learning. After the balance, new choices and possibilities are available to the student, and improvements are usually evident. The final unnumbered step is to celebrate the new learning. This is the step of play, exploration, innovation, and implementation that is so essential to creative learning, yet often omitted in the classroom, where learners are pressed to begin a new task before even acknowledging the skill with which the previous one has been accomplished. Anyone who is so inclined can learn to facilitate this process for themselves or for others by taking a brain gym course. The balance process is simple, yet requires deep understanding based on a personal experience of the physical as well as the mental and emotional components of the learning process for skillful, non-intrusive facilitation. Well, 80% of the process sounds like an intelligent plan for learning. So why muck it up with pseudoscientific jargon about neural repatterning or coordinating the front and back of the brain? As noted above, one study involved just 4 adults. Another hypothesized that brain gym movements can eliminate or greatly ameliorate the symptoms of hyperactivity, learning disabilities, attention deficit disorder, emotional handicaps, and even fetal alcohol syndrome. One study involved 16 elementary school teachers who engaged in 10 minutes of random movements in a room or a series of 5 brain gym activities. The results indicated that the hearing of the teachers was better after the brain gym activities than after the random movements. Is it possible to market to educators an educational product as scientifically grounded that isn't based on convincing scientific evidence? Apparently it is. One trick is to sound scientific. Brain Gym relies on giving the appearance of being based on sound neuroscience. It is not. There is, however, a theoretical framework as to how the brain works and malfunctions that is put forth by the Denisons as a basis for developing 26 easy and enjoyable targeted activities that integrate body and mind to bring about rapid and often dramatic improvements in concentration, memory, reading, writing, organizing, listening, physical coordination, and more. According to the Denisons, the right and left hemispheres must be coordinated. The front and back parts of the brain must also be coordinated, and the top and bottom parts of the brain must be coordinated too. They call these types of alleged brain coordination laterality, focusing and centering. While it is pretty much common knowledge that the parts of the brain must communicate with each other for proper brain function, the picture the Denisons draw is so general as to be useless for developing any meaningful activities that might improve brain function. When the Denisons do get specific, they make odd claims not supported by good science, such as their claim that yawning can improve eyesight. Denison believes yawning improved his own eyesight. None of the activities developed by the Denisons for improving academic learning actually included academic instruction as a component, and no diagnostic tool is provided for identifying which of the 3 areas of brain coordination needs the most attention. One of the foundational ideas of the brain gym is the thoroughly discredited idea of motor patterning put forth by Doman and Delcato. Their technique was very labor-intensive and included guided creeping, crawling, rolling, swinging, rubbing with a pot scrubber, fluid restriction, and carbon dioxide inhalation, which promotes intracranial vasodilation, and later megavitamin therapy was added. The Doman-Delcato treatment has been condemned for years by the major professional organizations concerned with cerebral palsy and mental retardation victims. It is also very expensive. However, it still manages to find clients. The basic idea of the Doman-Delcato treatment was that the brain functions properly only if motor skills are learned in proper sequence. So if a child is retarded, it may be because the child walked before she learned to crawl. The cure for retardation? Crawling exercises. There is no body of science supporting this nonsense, yet it is one of the basis for Brain Gym. The claim that crawling or yawning or jumping or moving your head from side to side can affect in any important way neural connections that make learning possible is rubbish. One of the strongest critics of Brain Gym is Ben Goldacre of Bad Science, who calls Brain Gym ludicrously pseudoscientific. He says children write to him and tell him how stupid it is, while teachers write to defend it. Goldacre doesn't quarrel with all the activities of the brain gym. For example, students are advised to drink water before tests. There's nothing wrong with drinking water before tests, but these folks think the water goes to the brain, which is already 90% water, and this will help you think better. They're actually taught that if one holds the water in the mouth for a few seconds, it will go through the roof of the mouth and be absorbed by the brain. Even if you stand on your head while drinking water, it won't go directly to your brain. Here's a description of one of the brain gym exercises called hookups. Shift electrical energy from the survival centers in the hindbrain to the reasoning centers in the midbrain and neocortex, thus activating hemispheric integration. The tongue pressing into the roof of the mouth stimulates the limbic system for emotional processing in concert with more refined reasoning in the frontal lobes. Sounds good, doesn't it? But it's unsubstantiated gobbledygook with no known connection to learning. Yet this and other brain gym exercises might actually relax or entertain students and relieve some of the boredom of their everyday classroom activities. Still, what is the point of adding a layer of neuroscientific jargon to the activity except to market it to clueless educators? They teach that rubbing your ribcage will stimulate the carotid arteries beneath and increase blood to the brain and activate the brain for an increased flow of electromagnetic energy. They promote strange physical origami exercises called hookups, where you press your fingers against each other in odd patterns, because these connect the electrical circuits in the body, containing and thus focusing both attention and disorganized energy. They teach a funny way of wiggling your ears with your fingers that stimulates the reticular formation of the brain to tune out distracting, irrelevant sounds and tune into language. They teach that rocking your head back and forth will get more blood to your frontal lobes for greater comprehension and rational thinking. This stuff is absolutely bonkers. I could go on, in fact I will, because so many teachers have written in to defend it. They teach that a special theatrical yawn will lead to increased oxidation for efficient, relaxed functioning. Oxidation is what causes rusting. It is not the same as oxygenation, which I suppose is what they're getting at. And even if they are talking about oxygenation, you don't need to do a funny yawn to get oxygen into your blood. Like most other animals, children have a perfectly adequate and utterly fascinating physiological system in place to regulate their blood oxygen and carbon dioxide levels. And I'm sure many children would rather be taught about that, and indeed about the role of electricity in the body, or any of the other things Brain Gym confusedly jumbles up, than this transparent pseudoscientific nonsense. Did I mention that the program is not free? I inquired of a local trainer about enrolling in Brain Gym 101, a 3-day course where one learns the basic 26 Brain Gym movements and the fundamental steps for sequencing these movements. The cost is $400. A 1-day seminar called Brain Gym in the Classroom is only $150 and includes water and snacks. That was taken from the website of the Skeptic Dictionary. And for the next segment of the show, the science segment. This taken from October 11th, about 3 months ago. Flying cars aren't the stuff of science fiction anymore. A small California company called Moeller is already producing a run of its M200 Neura, an ethanol-powered two-seater straight out of the Jetsons. The car is expected to land next year and carry a price tag south of $100,000. It's all the work of Paul Moeller, an engineer who's made the flying car his lifelong obsession. After the Neura, Moeller is readying a sporty sky car, which resembles a small jet and has a cruising speed of 200 miles an hour. Both vehicles are Volantors, meaning they can take off vertically, powered by Moeller's lightweight but extremely powerful rotopower engine. Although Mueller calls the technology as sophisticated as the system used to land a man on the moon, it sports a stabilization system that allows anyone to pilot it. And now the arena goes abroad. Today, blinded woman wins eye for an eye, Islamic justice. An Iranian judge is applying Islamic law to give a blinded woman the eye for an eye justice she seeks. A jilted suitor who poured acid on the woman, blinding and disfiguring her, will have the chemical dropped into his eyes. Some officials say it may deter similar crimes against women on the rise in Iran, but others doubt the use of violence will quell violence. So I guess we should just let them get away with it, right? Resuming, the attacker insists he didn't do anything bad. Jesus fucking H. Christ. What I would give for 5 minutes alone in a room with that piece of shit. Getting back to the article. And that he's still in love with the hazel-eyed technician he fell for in college. The 31-year-old victim hailed the court's decision. At an age at which I should be putting on a wedding dress, I am asking for someone's eyes to be dripped with acid. I am doing that because I don't want this to happen to any other woman. And now I have a comment about this story. If there is only one thing the Old Testament got right, it was the concept of an eye for an eye. I wholeheartedly agree with this judge's decision. In fact, I would personally volunteer to administer the punishment myself. For once, I am proud of the Muslims. Americans, on the other hand, would probably be worried that this type of harsh punishment might hurt the attacker's self-esteem. And for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, George Santayana, born 1863, died in 1952 at the age of 89. He was a philosopher, essayist, poet, and novelist. His quote, "Skepticism, like chastity, should not be relinquished too readily."
Are you ready, Goose?